Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm walking down
radio program of Team of Voices. And a Team of Voices is a poetry group under the umbrella of allpoetry.com, the largest poetry group in the world. And we have a Team of Voices programs on Blog Talk every night of the week, different hosts, different topics, all of them great and all of them fun, informative, and interesting. And I would like to thank Deborah Lee, who is our producer and creator of Team of Voices and these radio blog programs, for her power and her intelligence and her ability to keep this running and making it as enjoyable as it is. And so with that being said, and I want to say also a thank you to Jay Hatter, who is the writer of that song that you just heard, Words You Cannot Say, and music and sung by Shout Even Shy, and she does a fantastic job, and that's a fantastic song, and I hope you liked it, and you like it as much as I do. So with that being said, I will... answer the phone because I think there's a couple of callers on here I want to get to. And I do believe that this is Hatter. Is that you?
Unmuted. Yes, it is.
There you are. I couldn't hear you last. How are you?
I was on mute. Sorry.
Oh, were you? Oh.
Yeah, it said unmuted.
Okay. That was my fault, apparently. I didn't realize. I'm very sorry. And then we have the one and the only, Sweet Pea. How are you, Sweet? Sweet Pea.
Hello. Hello, darling.
How are
Hello.
You?
How are you?
I should probably learn how to run this thing. I'm trying to fix my... I don't know what I had done wrong with that, but there you are, just the same. So how are things in Colorado?
Not too bad.
Okay.
Hanging in
Today
there.
Is September the 1st. Can everybody believe it's already September the 1st? 3 more months and it'll be Christmas. Holy guacamole, eh? I'm just getting over a bit of an asthma attack, so I hope you don't mind if I'm coughing a little bit, but that's what's going on with me. And let me see. What's new with you, Hatter?
What's what? New with me?
What's new with you?
Nothing. Nothing new. Same old.
Okay. Well, tonight's show is an interesting show, I think, and it is about mediums. Now, we're not talking about medium well done or medium rare steak or anything like that. We're talking about psychic mediums who actually help people, I think. So this is part of the mysteries of history, this for tonight's show. And I have a few things to say with regard to mediums. Does anybody want to say anything first, Hatter or Sweet, before we dive into this whole meal deal?
I think it's a form of investigation that should be approached cautiously, but it has a viable... when they're looking for somebody and a medium says she's got a pinpoint with some kind of vision, you got to listen to her.
Yeah.
There's too many times that they're right. There's too many times that they're right to ignore.
Exactly. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Sweet, how about you? Got anything to offer before we dive right in?
I think there's such a vast form of it where you have someone that's constantly doing it, and then I think there's moments where we actually can be touched or talk to you, or signs that we individually have moments between the curtain. And I don't think that makes us mediums, but I think that if you're open to it, or even if you're not open to it, I think there's moments where that veil between you and someone you love comes through, whether you like it or not.
Oh,
yeah,
I agree with that.
It's
uncelebrated. It's an uncelebrated gift. People that are like charlatans and say they know and they can see and all this, and their voice too loudly. The people that are really seriously do not take money for anything they do to help an investigation. For example, an investigation of the last person. These people say, "Look, you might want to have this power or this ability, but I can guarantee you don't, because as much positive comes out of it, there's darkness they live in constantly. If they're being, you know, everyone's got a different story of what they go through, and it's not a good place to be." So,
I think that there's I agree with that too. It's, I'm just going to read a little bit about what a medium, what the word means and what it means in the context of like what you were saying, Hatter, about helping the police search for somebody, if you have some foresight in that and that sort of thing. So just let me check, see see. Okay, we're good there. So in spiritualism, the term medium refers to a person with a psychic ability to produce phenomena of a mental or physical nature by channeling or communicating with a spiritual entity. Mediumship involves cooperative communication between the human and one of more discarnate spirit personalities, often during seances. Information may be attained, paranormal activities may occur, energies can be channeled, or the spirit may manifest itself materially. Mediumship can generally be separated into two forms, physical mediumship and mental mediumship, sometimes called telepathic mediumship, and a trance mediumship as well. One of the more well-known types of mediumship often falls into the physical mediumship category. And as with most paranormal phenomena, mediumship has been the subject of extreme controversy. While many alleged mediums have been revealed as frauds, there is continued and even increasing interest in the phenomenon that those claiming the ability, reflecting the longstanding belief that the world consists of more than that which we can be known for sure, physical senses. Now, there was a movement of this, and like you were saying, you know, there's all kinds of charlatans out there that try to convince you of this or that or the other thing. But apparently there was an experience with the Fox sisters in 1848 when the two young girls made contact with the spirit of a murdered peddler in their New York State home. And the Fox sisters would regularly hold seances, and the popularity of contacting the other side spread like wildfire through the U.S. and parts of Europe. So that gives you a little bit of a history of it. So there's different kinds of mediumship, if you will. There's clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, and we're going to talk a little bit about that before we get into some poetry. And I've got a story to tell, and if you've got a story to tell, you guys can also join into the conversation as well. Where was I?
There's one other thing, if I may. These mediums they're at home and they hear this news broadcast, and all of a sudden they're hit with this vision. So they're getting something where this person is. They don't know what it is. Every damn one of them, when they went to the police, it ends up number one suspect at one time or another.
Oh, wow.
Because they have information. Because they find something they say,
yeah.
they just can't believe they knew. So, yes, you got to be careful of that. Have your alibis.
Yeah.
But
well, I think in our humanness, too, many of us don't have the capacity to think outside of the box or think in that sixth sense that we all have. We just don't pay attention to it.
Well, it's like the 100-pound lady that lifts a car off her baby. The brain can also be exercised that way, is under high stress or anxiety. What can trigger what? What our brain's able to.
Oh my gosh, we don't even use a tenth of what our brain is capable of. Absolutely, yeah. So there's different kinds of mediumships, and a lot of people that are claimed to be mediums, you know, they use clairvoyance quite a bit, and I have the definition of those here somewhere, I thought, but we'll get to those. There were some famous mediums. They were famous for musical sounds or appearing to have scripts written. They're called automatic writers, where, you know, the pencil would start writing without them holding it, type of thing. And there were also people who performed medium readings while in a trance state and claimed to have no knowledge of what has been said in the trance, and also performed in a astrological readings where he discussed Atlantis reincarnation and many predictions for the future, and that was Edgar Cayce. And
Cayce.
Is that how it's pronounced? Okay. Then in today's time, you have people like John Edward, Colin Fry, and they've hosted television programs instead of the more traditional seances, claiming to help audience members contact deceased friends and family. And you also have Alison Dubois' psychic abilities to aid the law enforcement in the capture of criminals. And they are really used a lot in those types of cases as well. And then you have more modern mediums like Esther Hicks, Jane Roberts, and they have written books describing the spiritualistic material they have received during their sessions. Now, I had the opportunity to meet, I'll think of it in a minute, James Van Prague, and that's who it was. I met him, and there was quite an eeriness about him, I felt, when I did meet him in a...
Is that the guy that proves the frauds? Is that the dude?
Is he what?
The guy that exposes the frauds.
James Van Prague, he's written books like Talking to Heaven and a few other books like that, but there was a sense of real eeriness when he was in the auditorium. And there was a girl that stood up at one point, and she talked about her having the gift. They talk about it as the gift. And he took offense to some of the things that she was saying, and she was just explaining to him what her experience was, and he just about ripped her head off. It was pretty bad, actually. And it was a very, very strange, meeting with him. He was kind of made you a little bit leery, I'm going to ask each of you, in time, if you've ever had an experience with something like that. I have, and we'll talk about that as well. And we've got a few poems. There's not a whole lot of poems, but we do have a few poems to read and or in our SoundCloud to listen to. So I'm going to start the show off with one of my poems just to kind of explain a little bit. I had people who have lost someone, and the grief is so deep sometimes you just can't wade through it at all. You know, you get stuck, you get in a place where you just can't seem to see the other side of the lake or the fire or whatever you want to call it. You're just stuck in this place. And there was, in my life, I lost someone that I loved dearly, and he had committed suicide. And for 12 years, I was tortured by it, and virtually tortured by it. And one day, there was somebody else that I'd known who's lost a son, a young son, in an accident the first day of school. And she had gone to see this medium that is in New Brunswick, where I live, in Canada. And I heard the tape of her experience, where they taped the show, taped the session, while they were doing it. And I listened to that, and I thought, I want to go and see her, because there were a lot of things in there that she could not have known. So I made an appointment, and I went to see her, and it was in her home at the time. And I was afraid to go and see her because, you know, you're brought up a certain way and certain ideologies and, spiritual beliefs, and some people think it's, evil or of hell, you're going to go to hell or whatever. And so there was a certain shroud over this that I didn't want to invite anything evil into my life, you know what I mean? I wanted to have this to be, and when she explained how she does this, there was a tremendous sense of calm came over me, and I thought, she's really the real meal deal. I'll tell you details after a little bit, but suffice it to say that this meeting that I had with her, and she channeled, there was no question in my mind. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind, because I did not volunteer any information at all. I didn't ask, she didn't ask me any questions, only to say, do you recognize that? Do you understand that? But she didn't pry to get me to tell her, and she could not have known the great many, many, many things that were said through these people that came, these spirits that came forward to talk to her, to talk to me through her. It was an absolutely life-changing experience for the better. The grief that I had for Bob was no longer the same. I didn't have that excruciating pain that went with it for so long. And I was released of that. And I felt as though I spent the afternoon with him, because it was he who was talking through her. It was an absolutely amazing, life-changing experience. We'll get into the details later. Has anybody got a comment to make right now before we go forward? Nobody. Everybody's quiet. Are you guys there? Yeah, had her in the suite?
No, I'm here. Oh, did you say me?
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm on mute because of my dogs.
Okay. So anyway, one of the things that she said to me when she was getting herself situated, there were two people that came forward. And as soon as she told me who, you know, what they were saying, and they were identifying themselves to her, I knew immediately who they were. And they were two patients of mine that I had when they were in palliative care. They were a husband and a wife, and they were had been divorced for a long time, and one was on one side of the unit and the other one was on the other. But nonetheless, and I knew who, I kind of chuckled to myself because I worked in palliative care for a good part of my career, and so there were many people who did pass away during that time, and I'm thinking, oh, if everybody comes to visit from palliative care, I'm going to be here for eons, you know, and she had a message, and here's the kicker for this is when she started, because I thought, how does she know this? How does she know? She knew their diagnosis. She knew what they looked like. And the woman that was there, she had beautiful gray hair. She even described her hair. But then she said she has a message for her two daughters, and she named her two daughters. And when she named the two daughters, there's no way she could have known that as a human being. That was given to her. And anyway, I thought, oh my goodness, this is she really is communicating. And so she had a message for these two girls, the grown women. And when I got home, I called one of them and told her, I said, don't think I'm crazy calling you like this, but I said, I want to tell you a story. And I told her. And she started crying, and she said, you know, she said, her sister and she had been having such a difficult time accepting that they were gone, both parents, pretty much within a few days of each other. They had a hard time coping with it, and there were some hard questions they had to answer, and those were answered in this little visit that I was, you know, thankful for being there so that I could go back and tell them this. So that was one amazing thing that happened. And I'm just going to check the studio again. Okay. And then the other thing was, she said, there's a man that's coming through. She said, I want to say he's your father. And she said, and at the time, I was hoping that he would come through because I was going through a difficult time with my mother and all of that sort of jazz. And I wanted to know if my father loved me. And he says to me through her, I didn't come here to apologize. And I was very saddened by that because of the way we were brought up and the violence in the home and that sort of thing. And she said, and then he says, but I want you to know that I understand, because first of all, she said, he didn't come to apologize, but he wants you to know that he carries around the letter everywhere he goes. And I had written my father a letter about, oh, I don't know, maybe 6 months, maybe less, 4 months before he died. And he referred to this letter and that he keeps it in his pocket all the time, and that it's very special to him, this letter that I had written to him. Well, she couldn't have known that, not in 100 million years. And So there were things that were revealed during that bit of part of the session that were cathartic as well as fascinating. The whole thing was fascinating. But, you know, his inability to express his love for me was still there at that time. And so that was kind of a saddened part of it. There were many other things that they, you know, that my dad has said through her. But one of the things that I found interesting was I use a phrase sometimes if somebody's being a smart aleck or doing something wrong, I'll joke around and I'll say, oh, yes, well, that's going to be on your big screen of life. And then she turned to me and she said, you know, this is going to happen and that will be on your big screen of life. And so there were so many intricate details, so many minute and absolutely perfect details that she could not possibly have known on her own. And she would doodle through the whole thing, and she drew a mace. For those who don't know what that is, it's a medieval device that was on a chain, and it had a big ball on it with spikes all around the ball. And he was hitting himself on the back with this back and forth on both sides with this mace. And I thought he had been dead at that time for 30 years. And I thought, oh my goodness, like, you know, that's you know, really her. She said, time up there is nothing. It's a blink her eye and it's, you know, 30 years later kind of thing. So there was a lot of interesting pieces like that were evident, and so many, many pieces that she didn't have a clue, or, you know, she wouldn't have had a clue how that came to be or why what that was all about. And so the rest of the day, the rest of the time that I was there, it just kept unfolding and unfolding and unfolding. And then finally, she said, I see this man. She said, this man is very, very shy. And she's doodling again. She's drawing a number with us. And she's upside down for me. She's across the table. So what she's drawing appears to look like it's upside down to me. And so she draws the number. She said, this number, he says, you'll understand this number and know who it is, but he doesn't know if you want to speak to him or not. So she turned the page around, and it was 18/21. And I thought, I knew immediately what it was, because the 18th of January is when he took his life, and the 21st of January would have been his 40th birthday. So then that came forward, and so many things within that relationship that I had with him were brought forward. It was absolutely and utterly amazing. And I will tell you that at one point, you know, you might not understand everything they say, but she said, you can go home and rest on it. It might pop up some other time. So I went home. I'm skipping over a million other things, but in the interest of time, I don't want to take up too much time. But so she said, she described my house as a split entrance house. And she said, there's a light in the entryway. And I said, yes, there's a light up at this, you know, the ceiling, and there's one going down the stairs. No, she said, no, that's not the light. But she said, but it's a light. She said, it's not a normal light. And I thought, oh, I didn't know what in the heck she was talking about. So then when I had gone home a couple of weeks later, I couldn't sleep. I went downstairs. And when I came back up, that whole entryway was illuminated, was completely lit up. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what is that? And I looked up, and there was a skylight in the ceiling of the bathroom that was at the head of the stairs. And through that light, through that skylight, the full moon was shining through onto this entryway. And the full moon is where I meet him every month for the last 20-some years, 28 years. Is under the full moon, and that's what was shining through. So there are many, many, many more things. So I'm just going to take a breath and see what you guys think of what I've said so far. Sweet, you there?
Yes. I think it's amazing. I think it's crazy amazing that anyone can sit down and tell you all these things and, you know, bring comfort that they brought. I think it's comforting and it's crazy, and I've had it done a couple of times, and it's spooky and scary about some of the things that they know. I was not as enlightened as you were. I think if you're more open to it, I think you have better success. I was not. So I think that if you're not as open, you don't get as much. I've had more success with just things happening on my own, where I am just by myself and things happen. But I'm really glad that happened for you and that it brought you peace. I think it's an amazing story of what you're telling. Actually, it's giving me chills. So
it was really
wow.
Yeah, and there was like so much more, and I felt like he was there with me, and explaining all these different things to me, but most of all, you know, of course anybody can say that, but it was him that was saying that, you know, that he loved me, and then I came away from there and on the way home, and that pain was gone, that excruciating pain that I had been carrying around for 12 years at that time, and it was gone, and I have never had it back. Like, yes, I still have moments of grief. Yes, I still cry at times. I write about them all the time, but I don't have that excruciating pain. I was released from that because I knew that he was there. He was alive. His spirit was alive, and he was doing okay. And you know, there was another part of this story that at the end, she said, "There's a girl here." She said she loves your jewelry. And as soon as she said that, I knew it was my friend Carmen, who had passed away. She was only 38, and I remember talking with her about her own death and what to expect, and I would comfort her, and she would me too, because she was my friend and I lost her. But I said to her, "I know you've never met Bob, but when you get to heaven, will you show him around?" And so Michelle, the medium, said that this girl, this friend, she said, is with your man, and she's, in her words, showing him the ropes, showing him around heaven. And so, you know what I mean? Like, it was just so many things. Like,
uh-huh.
She could not have known those things and so much more. And I just think it was an amazing experience. And I have three friends that lost their family members after that and in tragic circumstances. And so I encouraged all three of them at different points to go and see her. And all three of them came back after they had their sessions and came back renewed and refreshed and said, "I have a different outlook, a whole different outlook on the afterlife and us being here so temporarily." And their pain was released as well. And they had an absolutely fantastic experience. I've actually a fourth friend that also had an experience with her. So I think in that sense, I think you can get some form of healing, definite peace, to carry on, you know, because that's our job, is to carry on. And so to me, they can be used for good, yes. But she spoke about protecting herself with a tremendous amount of prayer before she goes into this sort of thing, because, yes, there are bad spirits out there. And, you know, nobody wants them in their lives. And so she was very mindful to say that it's not just a free-for-all, that you need to be very serious about it and protect yourself. and with prayer and the strength of God. So it was really a very, very wonderful experience for sure. So I'm going to so Hatter or Sweet, are you in a big rush to get away or?
I have about another half hour.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna do you want to read yours first or you want me to read mine?
No, go ahead and read yours.
Okay, so I'll read this. I'll try to put it in the room if I can get it copied. And then I'll read it, and then I'll do yours. I'll get yours up. Okay. Sorry. Here we go. Okay, so there, it's in the room there now.
Lady A, I will be right back.
Okay. So the title is There Is Life After Death by yours truly, Lady A. Quiet was the room, crystals on the table. New age music played eerily, yet peaceful. Scented candles of lily and lavender burned. A vacant chair waits for one I miss and for him yearn. Vibrations of love pure and sweet filtered out the wickedness of evil and deceit. She came, then he, a message to impart for two daughters and their broken hearts. Next was a man, stern and unbending. He said there was no apology, but love I am sending. There was a letter written long ago that revealed the writer loved him. We reap what we sow. Timid was the man who next came into view. Two numbers were penned. He didn't think she knew. Those numbers were emblazoned, etched deep into her brain. The words were whispered. A familiar, sad refrain. He said, let's not talk about it. An accident it was. She dreamed so many dreams she did not know the cause. He said what mattered now was that she know his true heart. He loved her then. He loves her now. He never did depart. On her bed beside her, as she cried and grieved his death, amid the shrine of pictures and love letters of great depth, he remained a devoted lover. He saw each tear that dropped. Her grief nearly destroyed her. He stayed. He cared. He watched. There were many things, he said that day, secrets no one could know. He'd say, 12 long years from when he died, questions put to rest, she knew he was alive. There is life after death. I know it's true. His sweet spirit came to me just like me and you. We talked of all the love we had, our future up in heaven. I never questioned why again, for our souls are now reckoned. End poem.
Wow. Wow, yay, wow. That is just stunningly beautiful. And I mean, it really makes me want to cry. I mean, what a beautiful place for you to be. I mean, I really hope it brought you and still brings you the peace that I feel coming from this poem. I mean, I'm really glad you found someone that could bring all of that heaviness in your heart and lift some of that weight off of your heart. Because I can't even imagine the pain that was there and that boulder, that whole mountain that was on your chest. And just those questions of why.
Yeah.
We never know why. I mean,
yeah, and you know what? It doesn't matter now. From that day on, it didn't matter why. I just knew that he was okay, that he's in a better place. He's being watched over and cared for. And I know prior to this that his spirit stayed behind because I was so distraught. Not that he was trapped in the earth ring, but he did come to visit me different times. I know the people in the listening audience out there might think this sounds ridiculous, but this is absolutely 100% true. This was my experience. And I could say so much more about it, and have seen her different times after that. And I think that there is a, because we're not comforted, we cannot possibly comfort ourselves knowing that our loved ones are gone, and then where do they go? Like, where are they? And you're left there longing and yearning and so very sad. But I think this is a way that people can reach. I mean, of course, like, you got to get a reputable person, of course. But I think there is a way of gaining that comfort once you've lost someone. And, you know, she did explain, too, that our time on Earth is so temporary and so short that we can't even imagine, you know, how short it is compared to eternity. And I just think it's you know, if you find the right avenue and the right person, there are those that can do this, and it is a gift. But again, I don't play with it lightly, because I do believe that people use black magic, or whatever you want to call it, for evil. You know, just as there are people that use it for good. And so I thought it certainly helped me. I don't think that I could have survived it at all after that long and not have some sort of peace about it, and that I certainly do have that now. Yeah. So, Sweetie P, you want to put yours up there for you to read? Or do you have it right with you?
I changed my poem. So I did that on you. So I changed my poem, and now I have to go find it.
Okay, well, I'll chat a little bit more while you're looking for that.
What
was I going to say
now? Isn't
that awful? No.
No.
I think
that
there was one time
I went back in the room and I didn't. That's not cool.
What was it called?
Oh, hold on. I'll grab it.
I just thought
I put it in the room and I did not.
I went on a bus tour to New York City one time with some girls from work, and there was a quiet reverie I felt throughout that whole trip. But in any case, long story short, without getting into too many details, my mother, as a young child, grew up in the city of New York. I don't know exactly where, but. For several years she lived there. In any case, we heard stories about it all our lives. And so when I was on this bus tour, we stopped at the different places, and I really felt my mother's presence there. When I went to see the medium, she said, there's a woman. She said she's jumping up and down. She's shouting, New York City, New York City, New York City. And I had just gotten back from that trip, and it was my mother. And I felt her presence during that trip, because I would go off by myself where the group would be together, and I'd kind of go off here and go off there, and it was so powerful. And she was very excited that I was in New York City, and she hung out with me apparently that whole time that I was there. So I find that those kinds of things are small little confirmations that this is the real meal deal, you know. Did you find it? Okay, good. So you're going to read The Forest of Death by Sweet Pea.
Okay. Fossilized branches stretched and twisted, intertwined in dark canopy of puzzle pieces, as the wind and leaves sing in opus. Quarantined in silence and onyx land, where the sun soil lusts to touch. Ice is the aura in the forest of death. Audacious trees stood tall and rounded, their trunks bleeding as the names of the dead were cut and carved. parents weeping, spouses kneeling, children pleading, a forest of horror, and the lost and the living stay unable to breathe. The leaves start singing their opus, a reminder of life's memory, asking the living to leave the blackness in the forest of death. The leaves turn gold, yellow, and red, and fall on the skeleton of the people that wept and mourned alone until their death. We all walk into the forest, we carve names into tree trunks. We lay in the soil, we stay in the darkness for years if we must. Listen to the leaves as they sing the opus of life, whispering to us, celebrate all the joy and the laughter, for it was a gift to you in your life and in poem.
Wow. That was something else. I liked everything about it, but I thought that was really, well, the picture's really, really eerie. But I think it was interesting to see how dead and the living gathered around and the weeping and the dead together. And you described those, you know, with parents weeping, spouses kneeling, children pleading in a forest of horror, and the lost and living state unable to breathe. That verse there just says it all for this whole poem. And I think that the skeletons of people that wept and mourned alone until their deaths, very dark and very, but realistic, because you know what? When I think about, you know, losing Bob, I think that's what it was like. You know, it was this forest of horror, you know, to leave the blackness in the forest of death, you know. The whole thing was black like this. The lost and the living stay unable to breathe, you know. It's a real thing that you feel when somebody has died that you love so much. And stay in the darkness for years if we must, and I sure did for 12 years. And it doesn't mean you don't get on with your life, you get on with your life, but there's a great big part of it that's been cut out and you've got this gaping wound you're walking around with. But I thought this was terrific. Very good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really hard. Grief can knock you to your core, and you have a very hard time not leaving that place. And not enjoying, you know, celebrating the joy and the laughter. It was a gift. That is the gift that someone that's passed doesn't have. It can't watch you enjoy. You know, that's the whole thing with the person that comes to me the most often or that I feel her presence is my grandmother.
Yeah.
And she was always about laughing and giggling and having a good time. And anytime I'm not doing that, there's a music box that she gave me, and it plays randomly, especially if I'm really having a hard time, and especially like right before my heart surgery. I was really upset and worried, and that thing must have played, like, I swear, 3 or 4 times a month, and it would just...
Wow!
And I hadn't cranked it, I hadn't turned it, I hadn't opened the box, I hadn't done anything, and that music would play. And that music would play. And I'd be like, okay, Graham, I get it, everything's going to be okay. I'll embrace the moment. And that's my grandma. She's always been there, she'll always be there, and was always a, you know, celebrate your life. And, that's where she is. And then my mom, she comes to me in the form of Betty Boop, because she looked like Betty Boop. So she was always teased by her brothers and her sisters that she was Betty Boop. And I'll randomly, just out of randomness, someone will, I'll see a picture, a poster, or a tattoo or something like that. Well, even here on AT, somebody will flash up something, a meme or something of Betty Boop, And it's always at the weirdest times, like where I'll either have been thinking about her or I'll say, oh, you know, oh, okay, Mom, I got it. I remember how to do that. Or, damn, Mom, and literally within hours or minutes or something, Betty Boop will pop up in my vision and somehow physically pop up within my vision, a sticker,
wow.
a meme or somewhere that Betty Boop will show up. And so
pretty
that really
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, Mom, I see ya. Yeah, it really kind of freaks me out sometimes when Betty Boop's in my face.
I don't know where that came. Is that Hatter?
Yeah, that's Hatter.
Scott, why does everybody blame me? Every time it's proven it's
and
not.
The,
why you
my
I wonder why.
Grandma, her biggest. My mom
okay.
and my grandma passed on stories like my grandma was driving down the side of a mountain, and my grandfather, who had been dead for years, literally was sitting on the passenger side, put his hand on her knee and said, Evelyn, you need to pull over. And it shook her so hard that she pulled over, and not seconds later, an out-of-control semi-truck was all over the highway. And if she would have been on the highway, it would have killed her. It would have literally killed her. And my mom was asleep in her bed, and her father all of a sudden put his hand on her head and put his hand through her hair and said, Mindy Jo, I'll always love you. And as he faded away, the phone rang, and it was her brother telling her her father had just died.
See? This is I believe that these are communications, and especially if it's something traumatic that happens, I think that there's a much closer connection left behind because of the trauma, and if it's not a peaceful death, an accident, something horrific, I think that's an important thing to recognize that, you know, they don't leave us ever, you know, and
well, one of them is foreseeing something, the other is preventing the future. So I think there are two different data categories, and I wonder if you could get in trouble for that.
I don't know.
Get in trouble in what way?
I don't know. Maybe the Lord's spirits are saying, no, you can't do that. You're not supposed to tell them ahead of time. You know,
well, I think we've been entrenched in religious beliefs about the supernatural, and
one of them is about things that have happened, and you put a spiritual title to it. The other one is preventing something from happening. That's different. You can take anything in the past that you can form and twist it, shape it any way you believe. Other people will believe it too.
Mm-hmm.
But when you prevent something from happening, it is almost on a different level of superstition or consciousness or spiritualness. You may
have
pulled over. They were not in that accident because they were going to be, weren't they? They were going to die. Wreck. Something told them to pull over. Now they weren't. So the rest of their lives, everything they do, touch and feel is because somebody interfered with that moment of time. So it's a difference between learning, labeling things that have historically happened in the past than it is to perceive the near future and prevent it from happening. I think it's two different things.
Yeah, my grandmother would definitely have been killed if it wasn't for my grandfather coming back and telling her, literally touching her leg and telling her, Evelyn, you need to pull over.
Yeah. And what if you could get in trouble? No.
Yeah, he wouldn't have cared if he did. He was that kind of guy.
Yeah. Get away from the rail. You can no longer watch. Yeah. Okay.
I think there are messages. There are messages for us. We just got to pay attention to them. We don't always see.
You know, back to the mediums. I think there's a lot of people that are into numerology. They're into astrology. They're into cards, for lack of a better term. Those people that want to sell you something, are I would question their motives for wanting to help you. But then there are the ones that, for example, an ex police chief of small town USA knows of a medium that helped the department unexplainably, but helped him, psychic somehow. And he goes to him when his grandchild turns up missing. But during his tenure of being sheriff, he could not say he believed in it, not one iota. You can't afford that because you will be run out of office, even if it is true. So it's the same guy that after he's no longer a police chief, he ran to that medium for help. That
wow.
one was real. And those mediums don't, they come and offer their abilities to a department. They do not try selling privately to the public. They don't go on the TV saying that they do this for a living. Those are the ones that I would give credence to. The ones that are saying, I'll read your palm for $5. Yeah, you know what? Go right ahead. You bet. So you have trouble selling me on that one.
One of them
picking up patterns in history of living through that torturous thing, that event somebody went through, and they can feel it. This ripple in time and space and consciousness that have been there before. That's what they're tapping into. It's not something that is spelled out in cards or tea leaves, you know, for lack of a better. I think you have to analyze each one approach in its own way to determine which kind of a psychic medium are you looking for, which one can help you or which one cannot. Because you can't couple up. It's like the mentalists on these talent programs. How the hell do they do that? Took a picture 3 hours before with the answer. Hold on, the answer. Okay. I don't know.
If
they could tap into as much as they could, if they could continue to tap into that realm, why aren't they filthy rich and you know, get the lotto numbers? Just one time, all they need is
well,
one.
Well, you know,
numbers,
I think there's something to be said. There's warnings if you get, you know, on a spiritual level. There are warnings that, you know, for us not to dabble in you know, witchcraft and that sort of thing, which is true. I think that the motivation, I think you have to be clear on what your motivation is with regard to anything like that. And I think used for good, it can be help a grieving heart and turn people around. So, you know, whether that takes place, and I guess time will tell, but I think that a lot of times people use in that good for good. I think it can be a blessing. So,
yeah, that place where the mediums live, the place where they receive their messages in one form or another is not a good place. It's not a happy place.
It's not a good place.
It's a place you don't want, nor you can't afford to hang there very long, nor can you ignore that it exists. According to them, I can picture 3 different psychics in my head by their image. Like, I don't remember their name.
Yeah.
And they don't offer.
I think,
like, they don't charge a thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think it's I don't know. It's a touchy subject, and you have to be careful how you handle it. It's like I said, that guy that I saw at the Capitol Theater here, there was an evilness about him. He would look at me with
sure.
A great What?
I said, sure, that they live in the dark. They live in the darkness.
Yeah.
Where that place is.
And just his presentation,
is,
I thought to myself, he's not a good man. He was not a good man, I didn't think. And I will tell you another story that I had seen someone one time that he, I went to see him, I knocked on the door, and he opened the door, and he was kind of startled when I spoke to him. And he, he used the, here's what he said to me when I went into his office, and he used the plural. He said, our spirits were afraid of your spirit. And I kind of looked at him and thought, what is he talking about? He said, you have a very powerful spirit. And he said, I had to basically calm down because he felt that I had something that was a little more than
yeah, but you were the one he noticed staring him down too.
I was, yeah.
So you come through the door. Uh-huh. That's what I'd say to you.
Thanks. No, but I think there's something to be said for that. Because different times they have shows like that here and people that come. So, this guy that I went to his house, he had a group session, and a friend of mine and I went to it. And when we got there, there was probably, I'm going to say, 30 people altogether, and he read everyone except me. Whenever he would come around, he would turn around and walk the other way. He wouldn't look me in the eye. He just kept on going, and he read everyone except for me, which I thought was really strange. But I also thought that, you know, I got to check the studio. I'm going to re-app in here. No, there's nobody. I also felt that he could see the goodness in me, and his spirit wasn't all that good. That's how I interpret that. Because, I mean, why else do you not read me? I jumped you on that one. No, I got Where did you guys go?
I was on mute.
Okay. So, but anyway.
Hey, guys, I
got to
go, though.
Okay, thank you for calling in and sharing.
No, I really love the topic. It was amazing.
If you can
Sorry,
call
I
back,
stay
please
longer.
Do, but I understand if you can't.
All right. I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
I'm going to run and eat dinner. If I get done early, I will call back.
Okay, great.
All right, bye, honey.
Okey-dokey.
Bye, dear.
Bye.
So, Mr. Chapeau, did you bring
yes.
a piece? Yes. Did you bring a little gift for me at all?
No, I can go find something. You want something funny?
Well, if you got something that's kind of pertaining to what we're talking about, that would be good. If it's funny, that's okay, too.
Okay. I'll be right back.
All right. You know, for those that are listening, there were a great many experiences I had with where I worked at the hospital and with the dying. You saw a lot of different things. And one of the things that I saw was the life, like when people were actually dying, you could see them reaching up for someone, and to, like, as if they were seeing a relative or something like that. They were very animated, let's say, when it came time for them to pass away. And it's like loved ones were waiting for them, waiting and waiting for them. And I saw a lot of different things like that. People expressing their last thoughts about life and death and all of that. It was quite a miraculous thing I found, and I think we have something to look forward to, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I really do believe that we have something to look forward to when we die. I think there's more to life than just being ordinarily living, but I think also too that there's something to be said for preparing ourselves to die. I think it's a place to look forward to. And I mean, if you feel like you're not doing living right and all that stuff, it's your option to change that, certainly. But I think that for the most part, I think that there's room for growth for all of us to realize that life is fragile, but it's still a very beautiful thing. And
so, what's the connection?
But in
between,
any case,
what's the connection between the two? Just that one, we use a life form, and the other we don't.
I think you can apply it to both. I think that we have the capacity to do that, and I think that there's. I think it's pretty darn exciting, really. Okay, let me see. I'm gonna get back to the poetry part of things too, Hatter. I'm gonna play a Stephen sent a SoundCloud. So I'm gonna put that on now. Let me see. There he is, Stephen. So you ready? Let me first, before I do that, let me put his poem in the room, and then we'll go from there. La-di-da-di-da. I think there's a lot of excitement. I mean, I saw a lot of different things when I was working. You know, there were a lot of patients that expressed themselves in a certain way, and that, you know, you knew that they were talking to the hereafter in some ways. And I think I became very sensitive, even more sensitive than I was before, about death and dying and the hereafter. There are Stephen's poems up there now. But I think that it's an interesting, very interesting topic to think about. And just like we said, you know, some people think there's life on other planets and that sort of thing. In the spiritual world, when you think about how we're put together and how we're breathing and living and all of that, like, there's got to be purpose in it, right? There has to be some purpose in it. And this kind of gives you a glimpse of the hereafter, because right now we're living in hell in many ways. But here's Stephen's poem, and it's called, A Message from Beyond by Stephen 76. And here it goes.
A Message from Beyond by Stephen 76. Electronic ringtone vibrates my pocket. It's you. Why wouldn't it be? You've been dead for almost 2 years, and a silence has walled the air between us for much longer. Illegal substances and lifestyle changes created the rift. A new spouse, you boast. I can hear the smile on your face. That smile, the one that helped me get through so much without ever knowing it. New wife I simply must meet, but how do I get to you? staying in contact for entire trip. You direct me to a gravel driveway, one I've never seen before but seems so familiar. Your call ends and I exit the car. The night air smells crisp and clean. Just like that early summer night, you convinced my father to let me go for a walk after my curfew when we were still in junior high, when we were still best friends, when we thought that we would be brothers forever. I look past the drive, between two rows of condominiums, a beautiful flower garden sits beneath street lamps, swarms of tiny insects under each light. I speak your name in a questioning tone, getting no answer. But as I take a step towards the garden, your voice speaks up from behind, correcting my direction. Turning around, I see you there. Your clothing is out of time. You were wearing your costume from when we were in Guys and Dolls in high school, the complete ensemble with the fedora. Stepping towards you, you apologize for your tardiness. I assume the tone of Admiral Kirk and excuse you. We both laugh and agree it was necessary. The love of my life is suddenly with us, and you point the way. Kay and I stroll from country to city street, from middle of the night to noon. I suddenly notice you have lagged behind. I stop and turn while Kay continues. There's that smile again as you catch up, but as you pass me, you begin to skip, just like when we were in grade school. You catch up to Kay, take her by the hand, and you both skip into the building to the left. I enter. You're both waiting for me. You are holding the elevator door with that smile. We all get in, and up to the sixth floor we go. Down the hall, you pull out your key, and with that smile, you open the door. End poem.
Wow. There's an end piece to this, and I'm going to read the author's notes first. This is about a dream I had about my best friend from high school. And this picture is above, when we had a falling out in adult life because of changes in both of us and his substance abuse. I always thought there'd be time to make amends, but he died. It kills me to think I'll never see that smile again. Unfortunately, I woke up as he opened his apartment door. Kay thinks he's letting me know that we're all good and he's waiting for me. I hope so. Absolutely, I believe it's true. And he's got here, dear Kirk, I'm sorry, brother, sorry for all the things that went wrong, all the mistakes made, and for always assuming there would be time. Despite the distance, I thought of you often, and I still love you as a brother. Love always. Michael. This is really very sad, but I believe that that interpretation is true, that he's there to say it's all good in the hood, and because they cannot be sad there, and seeing you makes him happy, and that's why he was smiling, and you will one day, you will meet him again in that very place. Beautiful tribute to your friend. A beautiful poem written about the reality of life and grief, and it's just a wonderful piece. And I think your friend is sending you messages in your dreams. What did you think, Patter?
I think
Patter,
that's. I think, yeah. Can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I'm sure he said he thought that would be pretty funny sending it. In a Kirk dream.
Yeah.
I remember you reading this before. I remember that picture, I believe.
I don't recall that myself, but I think that I think there are messages for us that we just are not paying attention to them. and they're there for us to have and to share with others. And there's a world out there that we're not conscious of for the most part, and it's all around us. And if we just pay attention, and I think that I don't think we need to be afraid. I think some people are afraid, but I believe that there's, you know, we're surrounded by love, and we just have to believe it. And it's just a fantastical part of our lives, and to be, accept the beauty of it all is special in itself. And so that's what I'm believing anyway, and I'm sticking to it. So I think we have a, I think Deb's going to try to call in, and we'll just I'll read another poem, because I don't think we have that many. We might just have just Deb's left. But and Hatter, did you find something?
Yes, I did. I put it on the topic page.
Okay, so would you like to read that now? I'll go get it.
Okay.
I'll go get it, and then
okay.
we can put it on the board for you to
read.
I gotta
switch rooms, so give me 2 minutes.
Okay. There, I got it here now. So I wish that there's some people who are, if you're listening in, to call in, then the number is 646-668-2837 to discuss and share a poem if you so desire, and take part in the show. So that's 646-668-2837, and that's Blog Talk Radio, and we'll have a chance to chat with you about our topic. It's a very interesting topic. I think that there's a lot to be said for all of it, and I think that it is a world out there that can be frightening, but I think for the most part it's an enlightening kind of thing when we see the spiritual aspect of it and what we're capable of. I think too that counts for something as well, and which I think is fantastico. And so we're still waiting for Hatter, but I think what I'm going to do... Oh, there he is. Okay, go ahead.
No, I think on this subject, a lot of times you'll find the people that want to say that God doesn't exist, and that's fine in their world that they don't, for any one reason or another. But in the same breath, they'll say the devil does.
Yeah,
it's kind of a
double standard, isn't it? And let me just—I got to find my way back to the topic board too, because I want to see how many.
Did
I don't know if I have any more. Deb has written one. I've done that, and you're going to read yours now. So that will be it for the poetry for tonight, and let me see, Hatter. You go ahead and read yours, okay?
Okay. Let me get to the... I think I still have it in my queue, so I can post it real quick. Come on.
Do you want me to read it for you, or are you going to read it?
No, I just got to take... Just got to get... Run down the hall.
Okay.
Come on.
Down the hall.
There you are.
Okay.
Okay, this is called His Soul We Cannot Save. It goes like this. I came across a group of men standing around an empty grave. Let him rest in peace, they said, his soul we cannot save. A few with nothing to do, counting the sins that haunt this day. Read the lines in the New York Times, no saint would stand in our way. No man is innocent if he feels the wind shaking hands with his guilty friends. Listen for the tear that drop with ease. His eyes are blind, but he sees. His life was built in shadowed caves. No saint will call for his soul to save. Keeping the books of sinners and saints, his power is dark by all constraints. For all that be you must believe, his words will die on this date. Throwing stones at ancient bones, the prophets have written his fate. For standing in the shadows of the evil that grows, you must pay for all that think they know. If 10 men die for the one that lives, ten men die for the one that lies, righteous will be your fame. Upon your stone, the words will read alone. No one will know your name.
Wow.
The difference between righteousness and sinners.
Yeah. That's really powerful stuff. I mean, you know, because that tells, like, on one hand, it tells you not to dabble with the, don't make deals with the devil kind of thing, right? And all too often we do, I guess. And it shows that we shouldn't, because you might have to bite the bullet, so to speak, in that sense. So
if you're going to take such a hard stance on something that is subjective in nature, you better have all the answers. And when you don't, you made a choice. And why don't you just tell people that you just made a choice and that you do not know? That would be honest.
Wow.
Rather than tear something down you don't have a clue about, just because you don't have it with you, doesn't make it wrong nor right. It just doesn't make it yours to tear down.
Now, you're waxing quite poetic and quite an intellectual right now. I thought that was a brilliant few statements, for absolutely sure.
I know stuff.
You know stuff? You have the internet, right? If it's on the internet, it's got to be true.
Got to be true.
I look at it anyway. Yeah, that was a brilliant statement. For real, for real. Okay,
somebody write that down? Can we get Saf to write that down for me?
Can I write what down for you?
Whatever
I just
said.
Just a second. Let me see if I can write it down for you. Hang on. You're going to have to repeat it so I get it right. Hey, go. Hatter?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, tell me what it is. I'm writing it down now.
I was joking. I'll have to go back and listen to what I just said. You said whatever you just said.
Oh, for God's sake.
Like you're smart or something.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I was getting all ready to give you a hand there. And
I appreciate
put
that.
Put your words down for posterity.
I was wondering how I was going to say to you when you asked that question. I have to let it down easy. I don't know.
Huh. So, okay, let me go back a little bit on the mediums where's my page? Just to kind of, because we can talk about the different types of mediums if you want. One of the things is, well, you know what? I'm going to just sort of talk a little bit about, Deborah's going to call in if she can. She's in the middle of horrific thunder and lightning storms. So I'm going to give her a little bit of time because she'll probably be able to call in. Hopefully she's all right and she can call in. And, okay. So, one of the things that stood out at me was something that she said about the big screen of life. And that thing was that when we, this is her interpretation of afterlife, when we meet our maker, the creator, is that there will be a big screen of life, and we stand before it and see our life in a review. But any pain that we've inflicted on anybody else, we will feel that pain, feel what it has, how it has hurt another person. And so I thought that was rather interesting to see that. And the other thing was time, that time there is not like time as we know it. You know, 30 years that my father, according to this, was, you know, hitting himself with this mace on his back for 30 years, our time. But in their time, it's like a blink of an eye. It's no time at all. And so that was very interesting. The other part, too, that was like is the happiness. I mean, I think there, when you look at what my dad was doing, I think there are different levels. I do believe there are different levels that we might experience based on our lives, which is also very interesting. And I must have to make a statement that say this has nothing to do with any organized religion or any particular faith or anything like that. This is just a topic of the spirit world, which I find very fascinating. One of the things, there's a lot of things that I could say, but some of the stuff I don't really want to say, but in any case, I think that this can be a helpful part of our lives if we have prolonged grief or prolonged suffering because of the grief. And that's a good thing. Oh, we got a caller here. Just hang on a second. I do believe that's our illustrious Supreme High Poobah. Hello, Deborah. How are you?
Hanging in there. How you doing?
Not too bad. I'm glad you called in. Have you been listening to the show?
No, we've had storms and stuff, so I can't listen without the Wi-Fi.
Oh, Dorothy, got Toto with you?
I know, right? No, Toto. We're not a tornado area, so to have multiple ones. I mean, I never seen so many back-to-back warnings before, and then to have three touch down, it was just like, you got to be kidding me. It just doesn't happen around here, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing more frightening than that supercell over the top of you that goes inverted, but it's so close to the ground it doesn't funnel. It's like just at the base of it, and it's actually forcing hail, and in my case, when it was over the top of us, It was stinging. So the hail must have been flying at least, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour straight freaking down. It was the noise of it, too, was just overpowering.
Yeah, it would be frightening to hear everything breaking under its power, too, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, like even just now, we got another alert, but this one's for flooding now because it's like, in 15 minutes, it's raining inches. So it's traveling up the coast. It's clobbering New York as well. I don't know what the track is, whether it's coming towards you, Lady A, but if they tell you to bolt or, you know, protect yourself, you should. It's really...
Yeah, it is coming up. We're to midday tomorrow or mid-afternoon tomorrow. We're supposed to get hit with
everywhere...
A bunch of...
You check out the news from when it hit in Louisiana and all the way up, places like Virginia got clobbered. I mean, that's another place where we don't really get tornadoes. And Maryland got, clobbered. And right now, New York City hubs are getting flooded. There's closed streets. You can't get from one state to another. We got clobbered. Anyway, I don't want to keep. I don't know how long the Wi-Fi will stay. So I just wanted to redo the poem I wrote for you.
Okay, I put it on the board.
Okay. All right, so this is called In Sights and Smells and On the Breeze. Channeling the signs from shadows and light so that not all things are just black or white. Displaying on the giant theater screens, darkness plays in the movie scenes. Dirty dolls that talk with dead black eyes tug the eyelet wings off lace butterflies. Signs from voices carried on the breeze whisper swinging limbs on the cypress trees, sending messages that surfed mixed in the din that are now waltzing goosebumps over the skin. Aromas trigger the brainwave flashes, showing color pictures that this brain stashes neath the lids with black velvet lashes. But do men and women chat with the dead, like the threads tied on tin cans painted red, as those voices chatter to them in their head? Are they all signs mediums read like a book, or just the posted lines read on Facebook and poem?
Ooh.
And I went there for a specific reason, because after my mom died at that particular time in my life, there was more than one person, but there's people all over Facebook that claim to be gifted. And if you really pay attention and to the things that they focus on and the things that they say, they just thumb through your pages on Facebook, find out stuff about you, who your relatives are, what you smile about, what you cry about. And then they play with your grief by pretending that they're talking to your mama, and that's cruel. Now, I'm not saying that I don't believe that there are people out there who have I am a very empathic person, and if you feel bad, I feel bad with you, and I can sometimes feel what, you know, things, but not like, you know, it's like, okay, here we are, we're all in this room now, let's sit back and let me dial into your relatives. Do you know a Joe? Joe? Well, somewhere everybody knows a Joe. So because of what this person did through Facebook, I'm a bit bitter and jaded, but I don't necessarily not believe it's possible. I just believe there's more crackpots and kooks and...
No, they're trained just like professional interrogators for the CIA or the Army or Air Force, whatever. They learn to read your body language, for one, and facial expressions go along with how you can manipulate a conversation. You can make them pick that card. You can make them pick that color when there was a choice of four. And it's strange.
Right,
and they just put they put odds on each one. So it's overwhelmingly what they're gliding for anyway. If they want to, leading a little kid.
Right. But to intentionally prey on people who lost someone because they're so desperate for just one more minute with that person, that it makes you, whether it be temporary or not, it makes you a little more gullible. And
when was it? Was it the 1920s? Was it the 20s that the seances really got big with the Houdini and such?
Yeah.
That was a big deal. And then they were proving a lot of the parlors, then they were doing it, there was a lot of trickery going on, you know, when they turned the lights out, a lot of charlatans for sure.
I think that there's certainly possibility of those things taking place and being taken advantage of. But if there's something, and what I went by from my own personal, I can't speak for everybody, but for my own personal experience with this, was that the things that were brought forward to me, nobody else knew about. And that was the stunner, because I didn't tell her.
Remember, Ida
right.
May.
Well, like I said, I'm not saying that I don't believe that there are people that are open and empathic enough for it to be possible. And there's even a woman in the immediate area around here that has a long line waiting for an appointment with her. And my sister had got in with her. And in that circumstance, and the reason I felt a little more like she might not be a crackpot is because she even allows you to just sit your tape recorder on the table. And my sister didn't say much. She just let the lady do the talking, and the number of things that she was spot on about were pretty awesome. So like I said, it's not that I think it's possible, but there's just so many that are, just like the magicians that have a coat check girl that looks in your pocket and then knows things about you and uses it to make them look like they read your mind or something. There's all kinds of little tricks, and sometimes it's just for entertainment, and that's okay. But these ones who tell you that they have a message for you from someone you love, someone you ache for, and they don't know squat, it's a pet peeve of mine. I mean, how dare they read my Facebook and then try to look like they talk to my mom? F you.
They should be under the laws of elderly abuse, human rights abuses, because that's what it is, to feed off of the people that are going through the roughest times of their lives. It's like with
Absolutely.
The fires in California. Fires in California. There's news crews everywhere, and once in a while they'll find somebody that's not supposed to be there. And they're going back into these abandoned houses and taking what they want. It's just they're feeding. They're the lowest part of society to prey on somebody that's down.
And I think there's all kinds of shifty people that are out there that will do exactly that, you know, that will take advantage of someone's grief
Absolutely.
Or sorrow.
And it ruins it ruins for the legitimacy of something, Betty, that might be able to do something positive. And just clouds that more.
Yeah. And I think, too, that, and even if it isn't true, I feel like if I got some comfort out of it to help me get through my grief and get to a place where I'm not suffering anymore like I did for so long, then good for me kind of thing. But yes, it's just like people that are, you know, they look up the funerals, you know, and they see the widow there. Well, she must have a few bucks. I'm going to go put the moves on her, you know, and then they steal all their money. Like there's all kinds of horrible people out there that will take advantage of somebody's goodness or vulnerability, and mediums are certainly one of them. And you can tell anyways, because if they're asking you a bunch of questions and you're answering the questions, they're not much of a medium, you know. So there's all kinds of ways to perhaps discern it, but it's a tough thing. You know, you got to do what your heart tells you, and I think your subconscious tells you if it's right or wrong, and if they're the real deal or not. And because I know that when I first met Michelle, when I first went in there, I was scared to go in because I didn't want to invite anything bad or be taken advantage of and that sort of thing. But she put my heart at ease. She's very big. She's very popular. She's hard to get into now. It costs a lot of money to go and see her now, but she changed to business partners and that sort of thing because I think the bigger that she got, the more popular she got, the more business people tried to take advantage of her. So, you know, I'm glad you put that spin on it too, though, Deb, because it is something to look at and something to pay attention to for sure, for absolutely sure.
You don't mean Sylvia Brown, do you?
Do I know
who
she
that
is?
Of course. I don't.
She's over here. She's just as renowned as, say, John Edwards.
Okay. Is she a positive thing, or is this a bad thing, or
I believe she passed, but yes, she was. She was on Oprah a few times, and Sylvia Brown.
A
lot of people.
Sylvia Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been taken down a notch just as much as she's been lifted up. She's a very, very controversial medium type. She goes on the air, publicizes herself as such, and that really leaves a bad taste in some people's mouths. She also says she represents certain law enforcement agencies, which said that they've consulted with her, but they do not tend to make, you know, her part of their department. It's just a way of advertising. Sylvia Brown was very good at it.
Okay. Oh, I think I've seen, looking at her picture, I think I've seen her before on TV.
Yeah, she used to have the late night call my number for a horoscope and a reading late at night too. She started there years and years ago. And then she would come on and, like Geraldo shows and give her a story of what had happened in this cold case. And she hit some things right, and she got some things wrong. So.
Hmm. Yeah, it's got a bunch of stuff about her. She's quite controversial about this, for sure. So, Deborah or Hatter, do you have anything further to add to? Oh, Deb's dropped already, so it's just me and you, Hatter. And it's quarter to the hour. The poetry's all done. And I hope that I've shed some light on.
Well, Lady A, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
What am I thinking?
I think I know, but I can't say it on the line. I can't say it out loud. Be arrested.
You know.
Yes, I do.
I just wondered if you could read my mind. I was going to tell you what I have.
Yes, I can read your mind.
And if you say we had not planned this ahead of time, did we? No, we had not talked about this.
Did not plan it ahead of time. No, not at all.
You were thinking the same thing I was.
I was too. I was so.
And you couldn't say it on the air. And you couldn't say it in the air. That's right.
No, you can't.
How did you know that?
Did you want to say it on the air?
No,
I don't think you better.
Yeah. Yeah, be careful.
Mediumship is a very, it can be a very delicate situation. My experience was a very positive one. It was very helpful. And I know friends of mine that have gone on their journey to the same medium came back a different person, and the grief was, oh my goodness, I can't even tell you how it was lessened. Like, it just gave you, it also gave me hope, you know, like that it's just, there's a temporary place where we are right now. And so there's hope for seeing those loved ones again. I believe that. I mean, there was all kinds of things I saw at, I'll tell you one story that went from nursing. There was a lady that we had, and she didn't have any family members, and she was very much alone and in our palliative unit. And it turned out that we found that when she was much younger, she had 5 children, and they all perished in a fire in her house, and she survived it. But how do you survive something like that? And so we talked about that quite a bit, she and I. And we were her family by that time, because there was no one left for her to have to come and comfort her. And so I asked her, I said, how in the world did you ever survive losing 5 children in this fire? And she said, I barely made it out emotionally. She said, I barely made it. And she said, when I was well enough, to get back on my feet, she said, I began volunteering in my community. And that's what kept me alive, is that I was helping other people. How amazing is that? So amazing. And so one day we were talking about her kids. When was the fire? Well, she would have been in her probably in her 70s at this time when she passed away, and the fire had been about 40 years earlier. She would have been in her 30s. Yeah.
So
the youngest child,
so
I think,
day.
Was
so
five, and the oldest
so
was
present.
15.
And it's happened more present day. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So one day I said, you know, I don't know what your spiritual beliefs are, but I said, I do believe this, and I hope that you believe it, is that when it's your time to die, I said, there is going to be such a wonderful reunion, and all five of your children are going to be there waiting for you. And when she died, I wasn't working in that section of our floor that particular night, but they came and told me that she had passed away. And I went into her room, and honestly, I never saw it before, and I probably will never see it again, but she was aglow. She had this, she didn't look like she was in her 70s. Her face was softened. She looked young. She had this tiny smile on her face, and I knew instantly that she was with her children. I burst out crying. It was a beautiful moment in time that I knew that she was with those kids of hers. And I'm going to read that poem, as a matter of fact. For this.
So there's huge power in faith. If you
yeah.
believe something sounds so strong to be true because of an incident or how you were brought up or something you saw or something you did, you totally had to believe. There was no other answer. There's no reason that it doesn't.
Exactly.
People that want to,
you know,
instead of build something up, they want to tear something down. They want to take something away from you, call you an idiot because you have faith in your life. It doesn't make it right.
No.
I think those people be questioned. And yeah, in the list that you'll have, your TV screen, did you say, your widescreen?
My big screen of life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to have some explaining to do. Yeah, all of your sins and questionable decisions you've made in your life are going to be broadcasted as everybody walks by. So,
yeah. So I'm putting this poem in there for you to read along with me. It's called Unspeakable. That's the poem that I – because I wrote a poem about her after I was just compelled to write. And it goes like this. Unspeakable. She is grief. Cloaked with the unspeakable, like an apparition traveling earth, lost, without purpose or desire, existing each day, loathing her worth. Her eyes told the story, empty, aimless, depleted, like the Great Wall, mile after mile of endless stone, unable to pierce the suit of armor, yet grief stands, she's not defeated. Decades have been swallowed, now extinct. A shadow looms near. It beckons her to sleep. Fearless, she faces the reaper. Relieved, come nearer, grief pleads. Unspeakable sorrow visited that night when flames licked the sky. She could not save the five she loved. Her children perished. They all died. Grief has left the world behind. Peace is now her name. Joy is upon her face. She has her children in her arms. For all eternity, they'll embrace. End poem. You there, Hatter? Did you hear it?
Yep. I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm playing catch up here. Okay. Unspeakable. 6 years ago. Have you changed this at all? Tweaked it in the last 6 years?
No. No.
Okay. Because I do that all the time. She is grief, cloaked with the unspeakable, like an apparition traveling earth, lost without purpose. just this day. Yeah, her eyes told the story, wall, mile after mile, unable to pierce the cedar armor. You know, if you take, sometimes it's poetic to just take, like, just take the first three or four sentence words off of the first lines and then go to the third or fourth line and do the same thing. So she is grief cloaked, lost without purpose. Her eyes told the story like the Great Wall, unable to pierce the suit of armor, yet not defeated. You see that, Lady A?
Yeah.
You just pick those up. Sometimes you can read just the first line of each stanza, and it works. A.P. Taylor and I, we do this, not often as we used to, but we would take that, and you could take the last line sometimes of each stanza and put it together. It's just who wrote it and where did they put the importance of the hook lines, the first lines, the last lines. Both are important. Last line at the end of the right, first lines at the top. That's where I look at it.
That would be interesting to do that. A different poem with the same essence, but yeah.
Well, I used to save hook lines. Just all I had was those phrases, those couple lines, like poets and paperbacks, or I can't even think of the title of my own. They're just the hook line, the line that sounds good, the words you cannot say. The story of not me. It's all embracing everything around you while you're learning and wanting to learn. You got to have the will to learn and to be able to look at things in a way that you can learn from to develop your own style. I mean, you guys say I have my own style. I think that's one of the biggest compliments you can give me because I've worked many years to get that style. And what it is a little bit of this and that, and what tickles the feather in my ear when I hear it read. Cadence is important. Cadence is just as important as a non-forced rhyme. And I won't post them. In fact, anything that I post that looks like might be forced, please say something to me. Because a lot of times, unless I have somebody read my stuff for me, then I might hear it. But there's certain things.
I don't think I've ever
writing.
Read anything of yours that I would consider to be forced, ever, really.
Well, thank you, Lady. I think I've found some. You know, there was a lot of writers that never got it on the air, too. So I got quite the vault to go back. I've been going back to reading some of the old stuff and go, you know, I could make this better, tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I've never done that. I guess I'm sometimes I think that if I did do that, that it would be a jinx on me.
Well, you got to be careful on, you don't want to change it too much because of comments.
Yes, exactly, too, yes.
So somebody commented on something and it's no longer there. You got to be sort of careful of that and willing to jump down that rabbit hole because... that's what people will read. I've gone to people's profile pages and went into their vault and waited around, found something, and started reading. And it's rarely the last thing they wrote. So.
Excuse me.
Unspeakably well done.
I think that you have a very big gift of writing. I think your gift of writing is exceptional.
Thank you. I got 988 poems.
Really?
I'm down. I'm getting to 1,000.
I'm over 1,000, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Hang on a second, let me see.
Can I post another one real quick?
Yes.
Okay. It's called Traveling with You.
I'll be on the 1,192 poems. Okay, put it in the room and I'll see. I'll read along with you.
Okay, there it goes. Traveling with you. Watching the sun crawl across the floor, waiting for the keys that will open the door. With you beside me, together at dawn, the many memories of the cities we've gone. A boat, a ship, or a fast-moving plane, maybe a berth on a slow-moving train. Another resort with beautiful room creates a memory of a second honeymoon. Hear the sounds of approaching keys that will open the door to set us free, packed with slacks of flowery shirts, pajamas with slippers and miniskirts. The times together, the customs we've shared, opened and x-rayed and with nothing declared. We wait on the spinning cold metal ride while strangers watch with curious eyes. Exhausting trips to unknown places, exotic resorts and suntanned faces. Time flies by in a week times two, spending my life traveling with you. I see your locks and the untied laces, colored tags that speak of the places. There's nothing better than tickets for two. I wish you to know that I love you. In poem.
Aww. Love it.
So we got 3 minutes, Lady A. Say goodbye.
Let me say my thanks and then we'll finish up. I would like to say thank you to Deborah Lee, to Jay Hatter, to Sweet Pea, to Steven76. I do believe that's all the writers that wrote for today. Let me see. I think that's Steven and Will. And, that was it for the writers for tonight, and I thank each and every one of you for writing and contributing. And thanks for calling in, Hatter, and sticking with me for the evening and getting through this, I think, very exciting topic. I think that it's certainly along the lines of the sixth sense, so that there we have the ability to tap into that resource if we would just open up our brains long enough to do it. But and I thank you
and don't be so critical of things you don't know anything about. Just let it go.
Me, or just people in general.
No. It's an easy topic to get away from you.
Oh yeah.
You don't want zealots there, on the soapbox telling one way or another, because that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. It is interesting. There's more to life than heaven and earth,
Yeah. I think it is. And I think we have to be, and it's like everything, we have to be careful where you tread, Just you have to be very careful. And see what happens. It'd be interesting when we get to wherever it is that we're going, whatever you believe in, and find out some of these answers as to why do we make life so difficult for the most part, it's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, and
so what about your upcoming shows for you?
Saturday, we'll be talking about money, be inspired, money
oh,
in any
yay.
Shape, form. What
the
it means,
lack thereof.
What it doesn't, or the trickery, the sleight of hand done with money.
Oh.
Statistics.
Now
and
let
such.
Me go into, because I would like to see. I think Deborah's got a show tomorrow night. Sweet Pea has a show tomorrow
okay,
night.
We just went off the air.
We did
live. So. Well, yeah, but we're still on record, but nobody's listening to us live right now.
Okay, so tomorrow's... Okay, so I don't have to announce it then. Except, because nobody's going to hear us. I thought people could still... Oh, if they play it back, they can hear, right?
Hello?
I'm sorry, what? Say that again?
If people play the show back, they can hear what we're saying now, right?
Yes, in the archives, yeah, on demand, you'll hear it. But at 10,
yeah.
We signed off live.
Okay. So this is going to be interesting, this week's discussion, loving someone through their stress. A loved one can be angry, grumpy, weepy, jumpy, crazy, mean, sad, lonely, and just plain not themselves. And how do you love them through all of these feelings when life gets out of hand and they need you, even if they resist? Oh, that's a hard one. Because you have to really look and say, okay, this is not who they are, and that's not what they're speaking about. So we have to forgive them for being, you know, cranky old buggers or bitches, you know. Like, you just have to, you have to be able to see past that and realize what's really at the root of all of it. Then you can become psychic and realize, you know, all these things. So that'll be an interesting, that's tomorrow night at 11 Eastern, I do believe, with Sweet Pea.
Sweet Pea. Oh, Sweet Pea. Now, is her early show? I can't remember.
Well, she's taking on the later show now. Let me just check and see what time
it's
actually at.
Cool.
It is at 11 p.m. Eastern, yes. Because it was too hard for a lot of people to get onto the early show with kids and animals and husbands and wives and that sort of thing.
Ah.
So.
Yeah, I don't want to.
But I enjoyed myself tonight. I thought the topic was a good one.
Yeah.
And I think, like anything, like, you have to write about, speak about what you know. What you know. Because doing otherwise, you just look like a jackass if you don't know what you're talking about, you know?
Well, yeah. That's, and it's easy to, when you talk of certain things that regard or need faith, to believe in. And you just might, it wasn't in part of your world at the time. And that's not a good thing, not a bad thing. It's just not your thing.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a good point, you know, because I think because you don't agree with it doesn't mean it's wrong or it's right, and it doesn't deserve criticism. I don't think so anyway.
Yeah, unless you're trying to trick somebody or rob somebody, hurt somebody in any way, then yeah, I'd be exposed, but if you haven't taken the time to know where I'm coming from or the... Your agnostic views are nothing more than a religion in itself, because you can't prove it either. And by definition, that is a religious.
But then there's a lot of poopy people out there anyways. They don't care what your thoughts are or what you believe in or what you're trying to say to them. It's just all about them. They get these narcissistic feelings out there, and that they're right and the world is wrong. Oh. How's your back, sir? Mm-hmm. How is it, your back?
It's about not very good.
Did you go for your MRI again, or do you want to not talk about it on here?
Yeah, I don't talk about it, really.
Okay. Well...
Football season's here.
I'm going to take my bedtime medicine and go to bed. But first,
okay.
I'm going to have a dill pickle because I like dill pickles. So are you calling in Sweet Show tomorrow?
I probably will, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll probably see you there then, if not beforehand.
Well, you want me to walk you back up to your throne?
You could do that, I suppose. I could
okay.
Probably message you when I finish my dill pickle.
Yeah, let me know when that pickle's done.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.